Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 42 of Zion's Finest. This is Kenny Brown, and I am joined by my brother, Scott Paul. I am also joined by two new brothers, Mike and Ray from Chatterpoint. I'm going to let them introduce themselves really quick before we get going.
Thank you for having us on, Kenny. We are Mike and Ray from Chatterpoint. We're located up in Prince George, British Columbia, Canada. So we do the Northern Gaming. Mike met Kenny down at LVO this year, and we've kind of just joined in between, and we've had talks going back and forth for the last little bit here. And yeah.
Awesome. And yeah, you guys have the Chatterpoint podcast, Chatterpoint, which is such a good name, and we're going to post a link to it in the show notes, but I highly encourage everyone to check you guys out. You also need to release a new podcast episode. Quit being selfish.
Yeah, we do. I've got one just about done here. I've got about 12 minutes left to get done on it. I probably will have it posted by the end of tonight here.
Awesome.
So people can look forward for that one.
That's also my fault. My time sometimes gets away from me, and then we don't always get to record an episode.
Being busy, I would not know at all what that is like. So you have no sympathy. Awesome. Well, we are so glad to have Mike and Ray with us. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing a kind of a takedown analysis of Adepticon. So I should say this. So as a part of our content creator shout out, Momentous Struggle, I encourage everybody to check out their podcast and especially check out their YouTube, because Todd and Aubrey have posted a ton of Adepticon content there. They record all the games that are recorded on Swiss are on their YouTube. They are also going to be releasing episodes, I know, with the new, they're going to be releasing episodes with the winner, Matt, from Adepticon. And they're just going to have a lot more Adepticon content coming out. And the same is to be said for Hello There. I won't tell you exactly what their podcast episode is going to be about, because I don't know. I will just say that they are also going to have a lot of Adepticon content coming out. And I highly encourage everybody to be checking in for that, because talking about Adepticon is what we're going to be doing for the next few weeks, because there's a lot to parse. Okay, so for upcoming events, this is for people in Utah. Sorry about that. Mythos Games is hosting a tournament in South Salt Lake on April 27th. Dice Roll at 12:30. Abby Hansen is running that. I highly encourage everybody in Utah. They actually don't have that many spots left. So if you are in Utah County, this is an excellent opportunity for you to get a game in without having to drive that far north. It's going to be a great, great event. And it's just going to be a showdown event, not premiere. And then last but not least, the Zi-Fi Invite is happening on May 18th. We're currently at 29 of 32 slots. And I think it's going to be full. We're going to hit capacity. So if you're wanting to come, you should be signing up pretty soon. May 18th, the registration starts at 10 a.m. Dice Roll at 10:30. We're going to have the best prize support ever. Even better than AMG. Their price support sucks. Just kidding. That's not true. Their price support is awesome. Okay, but before we get to the main topic, let's talk about some recent games that we've played. Mike, have you been able to play any games recently?
I played a game, what was that, Ray? 3 weeks ago, maybe? 4 weeks ago?
3 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, probably 3 weeks ago. I testing out the new Vader box with the Stormtrooper Sergeant and the Stormtroopers. I paired it up with another box that a very kind person had just given to me, the Inquisitors. So I took, obviously, Vader, the Stormtrooper Sergeant, the Stormtroopers, along with the Grand Inquisitor, Reva, and Fifth Brother, because Fifth Brother is amazing.
Fifth Brother is, turns out he's super good. How did the list feel?
You know what? I was very surprised on how much healing came out of the Vader box. It was just bananas. Like, I think I had my Stormtroopers down to 2 hit points left. Between Vader and the Sergeant and the Stormtroopers, all next activation, all of a sudden they were at full. And things were had. Ray did the smart choice by taking the first struggle, the first mission, so I couldn't get any extra focus.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucked, but I ended up pulling the first struggle really quickly with that list, just due to the absolute bonkers speed of that box. There's so much so much in that box. I really enjoyed it. And Fifth Brother was a champion. Just straight up pushing people off of objective. He took the high ground away from Obi-Wan, pushing him off an edge and stole the objective. And then second struggle, we ended up having to call short because my daughter broke her arm and I had to go pick her up. And but it was heavily weighted towards my side when we called her. So we just called her a win for me, and it ended on two.
Awesome. Mike, what do you like to run? Like, what is like your favorite, what's your favorite unit? What's your favorite kind of list to run? I should have asked this.
I like aggressive lists. Honestly, Jedi Hunter Vader is my favorite in the entire game. He runs up, he slaps, he gives other people bonuses to slap. And I loved running him in Vegas with Luminara because we've now sacrificed a bunch of hit points to get extra dice, and then she just heals it off.
Mike is a Sith through and through, just hate and aggression in every list.
Absolutely.
And I can attest to that. Like, playing against that Vader list, it was like banging my head against a brick wall. It's like, okay, I'll use this unit to damage these guys, okay, and then I'll just chain this next guy so that I get, oh, you just healed the damage I did. So even if I chain this, I'm repeating a cycle. We're just cycling the drain here. Nothing's getting done on my part, and it was brutal to play against.
Yeah, that new Vader seems... I am really excited to try out. I'm mostly excited to try out the Stormtroopers and the Stormtrooper Sergeant with Luke because they just seem just so durable, and and they have diceless displacement. I'm super excited to try them out.
I'm excited for when Moff Gideon comes out and I compare those two together.
Oh man, yeah.
That was one of the interesting things too, is the amount of movement you can get off the Stormtroopers. And if you just use them as that, just slingshot them across the field to body check somebody off of an objective, there's quite a bit of utility in using them that way and not just for positioning an attack, which I did find they played different from the clones in that aspect, where you want to keep the clones in cover because if they start taking damage, you're going to lose them. Whereas the Stormtroopers, you're more likely to just throw them out there because they're pawns. And if you lose them, oh well, but there's a good chance you're going to be able to heal them up so you don't end up losing them.
And they're at 9 health, which is a huge deal.
Yeah.
Huge deal. Yeah. Awesome. 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 Scott, what recent games have you played?
Well, you know about it because it was 2 days ago at your house.
That's
so I played against Curtis. So we played a Sabotage Showdown game, and Curtis was running Jedi Hunter Vader with Count Dooku. So he was doing Jango, Magna Guards,
Bar 2.
That's right. He did run Bar 2. You know, he didn't run Obi-2.
He didn't have Obi-2? No, he was running Boosh.
Yeah, he was running Boosh. So it was Vader, Boosh, Bar 2. And then I was running, we were running similar lists, but very different. So I was trying out, I had previously run the new Vader box. So Vader, Stormtrooper Sergeant, Stormtroopers, and the Luke box with Luke, Boosh, and Bar 2. And you and I had been talking about just being pretty underwhelmed with Leia Boosh and not feeling like she produced a lot of value for like her slot. So I slotted in Obi-2, and it was an interesting match. So I felt like it was a pretty close game. A lot of trading points back and forth, very even, kind of going in the first struggle. I did eventually kind of win the attrition game where it got to the point where he couldn't take points back from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the first struggle. Second struggle went pretty clearly in his favor. Like I held on for a little bit, just delaying, not to win the second struggle, but just to, you know, play a little bit more of the attrition game, put some damage on his stuff. And then the third struggle, again, pretty even, but we hit a break point, where my Jedi Luke came up and essentially kind of guaranteed the win for me a little bit, as close as you can get to a guarantee getting attacked by Jedi Hunter Vader. But it was really quite interesting because, so I think Jedi Hunter Vader, it was always my opinion that he was better than Emperor's Servant Vader, which I still think is probably the case. But I've been more and more impressed. I was pretty skeptical about Emperor's Servant mostly because I never know how putting his card back in the deck is going to behave.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he will get better and better as we get more Imperials out, Moff Gideon, the Dark Trooper. I think the Vader box with the Gideon box is going to be a powerhouse list. Yeah. I'm very excited to run it. It's going to be, honestly, it's scary how good I think that list is going to be. And maybe I'm wrong, but I'm very excited.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
The ability of... So, obviously, Second Vader is not as mobile, but he has the ability to basically... Any condition you put on him is irrelevant, as long as there's only one, right? Otherwise, he could just heal. He's recovering a force. The list only has 6 force, but I found oftentimes I'd end a struggle with 1 or 2 extra force because you just have that recovery. You've got really solid damage. It's not as good as Vader's. It's not as Vader 1's. It's not as consistent, but it is still really, really solid. And his ranged attack is better than other Vader's ranged attack.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because I think it's more flexible in the things that you can put on in conditions and pushes. And you can also make it 8 dice. So you get an 8 dice ranged attack, which you can't do with Jedi Hunter Vader. And so I found his expertise isn't as good, but he's still, in terms of being a beat stick, is still pretty effective at that. And the fact that if you don't wound someone, he continues to be a threat. I think that there's a fear that if your opponent is pushing him and dropping a ton of conditions on him and just making him super far away from the conflict, that having his order card continuously cycle is a really big problem.
Yeah.
That being said, until that happens, it's a huge threat to your opponent who it changes all of their math. It's like, oh, well, I thought I had this because there's an activated unit who's there, but it's like, their Vader can go at any point and just take this point away from me.
Yeah.
So there's a fear there. Obi-2, I don't feel did what he normally should do. And it's kind of led me to the personal decision that I'm not going to run Obi-2 unless I have Jedi Hunter Vader.
Yeah.
I just think that the extra dice from Obi-2 is essential in making him, because he's only doing 7 dice maximum and he's got some heals, he's got some really cool stuff. So he can have really impactful turns, but he needs those extra 3 dice for that consistency.
Yeah.
Because if he's only getting 1 step, it's kind of pointless. And it's also a pretty, there's only 6 force. It's hard to spend 2 on mind tricks, sometimes 3 if they've really got you.
Yeah.
So I don't know that Boosh is, I'd put Boosh back, but I definitely don't want Obi-2 in that slot. Bar-2 is, and Lando are great. I think they're fantastic supports.
Yes.
I'll echo everything Mike was saying about the stormtroopers and the stormtrooper sergeants. What I find with them is they're not doing damage hardly at all, right? Like stormtrooper sergeant, he's doing 5 damage at most. And the stormtroopers, you know, probably are doing 3 or 4 damage each, probably more like 2 or 3 each. But they are dropping out a lot of conditions. They're flexible. They're giving each other more dice. They're really great supports because the ability to just advance them or dash them or move around and body block and also just have a ton of health and be pretty defensive is just really strong, being able to make yourself very flexible. So I really like them for that. Jedi Luke, I feel... I still like Luke. I think that he just is a very different figure than a lot of other primaries. He, for me, in my game, you know, it's like, okay, well, Curtis has this point on the left side, so I'm going to run up. So I run up, I got my free jump and my advance, and I'm within 2 of the objective. So I go, okay, I'll do, you know, you can profit by this or, you know, be destroyed. So he just dashes away and I dash up. So I take the point, which is great. But there were, and then later he came back and did the same thing when his Bar-2 was on a point and just dashed away. And then I took the point. But Luke only attacked once in the entire game.
That's wild.
Because he just went around and threatened to attack people with 2 attacks.
Yeah.
And he's just like, well, it's never worth it for them to just take it.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting math that I think is kind of weird because if you just attacked once with Luke, you probably aren't going to wound someone. But if you get two attacks, it significantly goes up. And I won the game by him going to the middle point. My Luke had taken it. He dropped his Jedi Hunter Vader. He had to do 11 damage to my Luke in order to wound him.
Yeah.
He did 10 and a strain.
Oh, man.
And pushed me off the point.
Yeah.
But I had rolled an expertise that I got two heals and a jump. So I just healed the strain, healed the damage, and jumped back on the point and won.
Yeah.
So in some ways, like, Luke represents a really interesting figure. But if you're like, Luke's going to come and be a Vader beat stick or a Maul beat stick, it's like, no, that's really not what he's doing. He's very good at taking a point and like putting that pressure and keeping the point, but he's not your murder stick.
No, no. I have definitely had Luke. I mean, I have definitely had Luke brick attacks. And so, and also he's just I think he's a very high skill cap in that there's a lot you can do with him, but also he can let you down. And if you misuse profit, you're a sad panda. Awesome. All right. Well, Ray, first off, tell us what kind of list you like to run and then tell us about any recent games you've played.
In terms of lists, I prefer mobility, especially like after the first couple of games, I definitely went a little character killy in the first couple of games, realized that's not how the game's played and it's really holding that objective. Honestly, anything with the ability to jump boot, so like Mandalorians, Cad Bane, quite a bit I found myself taking like bounty hunter stuff, so I'll take Cad Bane, but I will sub out Aura Sing for Jango Fett. And then I'll take like the super commandos, and then I'll just take like a Mandalorian list. I haven't quite found my second primary yet. I did play a game last week there against Ewoks. I used Luke's box for the first time, and I paired it up with Mace Windu. I was just kind of testing out two boxes at that point. Sure. It was my friend's second game with his Ewok, so I wasn't too worried. I got a pleasant surprise with Luke. I wasn't expecting as much mobility out of him. And unless I did this wrong, so what had happened is I activated Luke. He got the jump, refreshed the force. I then moved up to an Ewok hunter, hit the hunter, and wounded him. This triggered the Bright Tree Defender. So he came in and he got a 5 dice attack on Luke. And to my understanding, that still counts as a melee attack. So after he finished the melee attack, I triggered Luke's reactive ability for I will not fight you. And then so I had I wounded his hunter on the objective when either Logre or Chirpa, I think it's Chirpa that has defender, came in and tried to attack me. He wasn't within the objective. So my Lando and Bar 2 that I already had on the objective fighting his hunters now controlled it because I had wounded his hunters. At that point, I had jumped Luke up onto a high ground terrain where he had had a trapper holding an objective by itself, jumped up there, and then used the profit or be destroyed. And I'm just like, well, I'll use this, and you can either stay here or you can dash away. He's like, no, I'm not letting you take another guy. So he dashed away at that point. But I had managed to secure two objectives in one turn, and Luke had started on my side of the table almost at the start of the turn. So the amount of mobility out of him was insane. Bar 2 and Lando performed very much like it's card to paper to play. They play very much how their card reads out. I didn't have too much issue with them. One thing I did have an issue with was higher terrain ground a little later, especially because I did separate my R2 and my Lando, which, I mean, there wasn't any issue with that early on in the game. But R2 kind of got stuck on a higher terrain where I just kept getting pushed off by Ewoks. And him and Cad Bane actually kind of got bunched into a corner by Logre, the other secondary, and one of the one of the trappers, had sort of box them into a corner, and they just kept applying status effects to Cad Bane. So like I was either pinned or exposed or strained or just all those things. So whenever he got his activation, he was mitigating so much of it that he wasn't any usefulness. With Boosh, though, because of her Bounty Hunter, it really paid off when I was able to hit Chirpa afterwards. I moved her up, hit Chirpa, took him down the rest of his health, and then paid that force point for that extra momentum. And then on top of that, like, I paid that, but then because of Cad Bane's ability activating, I got that back, so you can basically trigger her force momentum thing for free when you take her with Cad.
That's absolutely wild. Cad is your main squeeze. Do you run Maul? Have you tried Maul?
me and Mike were talking about this today. I love Maul. He is one of my favorite characters in the series. And like he was my go-to when me and Mike split the core box. I was like, I got Maul. I got Mandalorians. This is awesome. I played him four games in a row and just crap the bed with him every single game. One game, I'm not even going to blame me. I'm going to blame card order. I drew him last twice in the order deck. So it just didn't turn out well. But aside from that, I've played him so poorly that I was like, nah, he's garbage. He's just no good. And then after Adepticon, and I'm looking through all the lists with Maul in it, I'm like, oh, I'm garbage.
I see.
Maul's pretty dang great. Maul's one of the best.
Maul's kind of like, I mean, Maul is an interesting figure because he's only got two stamina, and he's one where, you know, he can be bursted down very quickly. He's just he's a very strong piece, very strong controlling piece, but also a piece where if you overextend, you will just be very sad in terms of, because he'll go down quickly.
And yeah.
So, but he's very cool.
Here's an interesting thing about Maul. And I don't want to belabor it because it's not what we're doing, but also obviously we're going to talk about Didapticon. But if you took away Maul's central like key like kind of thing about him, which is you know, you can spend damage instead of force.
If you
just took that away and gave all of his abilities like, you know, the force cost that they have and you didn't take that away, where do you think he would rank? Because like if you consider like his damage profile, doing extra damage, you know, when he takes damage, having diceless displacement, having a force rush, like a force speed, arguably he's still a pretty good figure without the ability to take damage for force. Like it makes sense why he's so good.
Maul's awesome. Such a good figure. And yeah, we're going to be talking about him in Adepticon today. That is for sure. Okay, so my recent games, I played two recent games this week. I played one as I did Mama Dooku, as we're going to be talking about with Adepticon. This list was all over the top eight, and I've played it before, but I've gotten a lot better since the last time I played it. And I just ran straight boxes. Dooku box, Mama box. And the thing that's super interesting is, so one, I do not like Savage Opress. I do not think he is good. However, he is tanky. He is also a separatist, which I did not know, which matters for Dooku when he is Dooku's start of activation movement can trigger on Savage. So Savage can be moving around with Mama doing her thing and then Savage triggering off of that, and also with Dooku, which is very, very interesting and allowed me to do some really cool things in this game. I was playing against Steven, who was running a kind of weird, not weird, but he's running Obi-Wan with Vader 1, but then he was running Jango and Fifth Brother with Obi, and then Rex and Arfs with Vader. So the idea is that he's running obviously just lots of good things, and he wants to be able to hunker with Jango and Fifth Brother in order to make him super tanky. So we played the list we had. It was really fast. No, it wasn't. It was like a medium struggle one, super fast struggle two, which Steven won. I won struggle one. And then I was able to close out struggle three pretty quickly. So Mama Dooku, super good. And if you get reps into it, it's one of those lists that you can, I think you have an answer for almost everything. It felt very, very good. Our second game, I switched to play Vader 1 and Ahsoka. So really what I was doing is I was playing the Vader Grievous list, and I just subbed out Grievous for Ahsoka. Just thinking like, let's try this with a little bit more defense and see how it works. And it was, I mean, it's a very strong list, and Ahsoka is super interesting when she's got an extra three dice from Vader. I mean, she's not Grievous or anything like that, but she's so tanky. And so, like, Grievous, the problem with Grievous is you push him up, you take your damage, you murder somebody, you heal, and you're like, oh, I've got 11 health, I'm totally fine. And then Grievous, he can get burned down super fast if he doesn't have Magna Guards around him. That's not how it is with Ahsoka. She's so fast. She runs up on something. She gets there. She rolls her three extra dice. She can do lots of damage. And she is very difficult to displace. So it's a very, very cool list. I don't know. I'll give it more plays. I do think it's really tough to think about where Snips go. Or I'm sorry, where Ahsoka goes in lists without Vader 1. But as we're going to talk about here with Adepticon, Ahsoka did pretty good. So I think there's a lot of matchups that she can do very well into. We'll talk about it. But okay. Let's get to the main event. So, Adepticon happened. It happened in Schaumburg, Illinois. There were, I will tell you how many players there were. Okay, there were 53 players. I guess 52 players, technically. We had a drop in Adepticon. I am just going to go over some of the main statistics. And I'll go over some of the main statistics. And then we're going to parse the top eight matches going down to the championships a little bit more. So Dooku was the most played. He was 28 players ran him. He was in 64 games. Maul was the second most played. He was ran by 28 players in 52 games. Mama T, 21 players, 46 games. Vader 1, 18 players, 43 games. Grievous, 17 and 37. And then Obi-Wan was 12 players, ran him in 30 games. Okay, actually, that was going to be my last one, but I want to do one more. Because the 1, 2, 3, 4, the seventh most common primary, which this is not what I called. I called the exact opposite, was Asajj. And she was 12 players ran her shoes in 26 games. We're going to get to win rates and just like how everything broke down in a second. But guys, I want to ask you a question. Who do you think was the least played? If you've seen it, then don't say anything. But who do you think was the least played primary at Adepticon?
Padme, wasn't it?
It's a good guess, and that is not correct.
Okay.
But good guess. That's who I would have guessed, like, thinking about it a little bit more.
What did I say in the episode, Kenny, that I said would be lowest played?
I think you might have said one of the Ewoks.
It was Ahsoka or Asajj. It was one of those two.
Oh. I mean, I said Asajj, and I was very wrong on that. So,
yeah, obviously. I think I'll stick with Ahsoka.
Okay. What do you think, Mike? Who would you guess?
I'm trying to think of all the primaries, and I'm inclined to say Obi-Wan.
Okay, well, so Obi-Wan, I mean, Obi-Wan was the Republic's remaining him, and he was in 30 games. The least played primary, who was in one game, which he won, was Vader 2, the Emperor's Servant.
What?
Really?
Only one player brought him, and that one player only ran him in one list. So, and it was actually Dennis who made the top eight. I was shocked that was the case, that only one player ran him. So I don't know if it's just a matter of reps or what was going on there, but yeah. So
familiarity
I think was a big deal. And we'll see as we're going down that I could see why that would be the case. So let me just give you some statistics on the primary.
I was going to say, if you're comparing, you're only allowed to take one Vader. So if you're comparing Vader 1 to Vader 2, I mean, yes. Vader 1 is much easier to run. He puts out a yes. lot of damage, and he's a huge threat.
Great point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ooh. I think that's
a juice.
I think, not knowing Dennis's playstyle or thing, if you look at his other list, it's Maul and Mother Talzin. So that's a very competitive list. Like, we've seen that used either Maul or Mother Talzin or Dooku Mother Talzin. Yep. Like, that's kind of the go-to that we've seen. And then he took the Vader and Inquisitor list, which, I mean, like, me and Mike have played that list. I think that's the one where if you know your opponent and you know you have to play an attrition game, and it's just that one game where you can guarantee that attrition is going to win you the game, then it's absolutely the right play. And it's possible that that's how he took the game too.
Yeah. It's just very interesting that, I mean, I love that he only ran him once, but I love that he was just running Vader 2 box and Grand Inquisitor box. He ran Third Sister, he ran Reva. And it was only in one game, right? But and then Fifth Brother. We all know how good Fifth Brother is. So, I mean, what's interesting is that I expect that the Inquisitor is going to want to be running with Vader 1 because he's going to want those dice. But I think that what Dennis was doing was running it more as a control list, mm-hmm. right? Because he's got lots of displacement. So I could see that being the case. Okay, let me give you guys some general stats. This is primary stats. So I'm just going to do the top five win rates. And this is not the most relevant because I want to talk more about player heroes that were taken a lot or primaries that were taken a lot. But Vader 2 was in one game that he won, 100% win rate. Ahsoka, Jedi No More, was in 9 games of which she won 8 of them. And her best wow. matchup like that she played a lot of was into Vader 1, which I think makes sense because Ahsoka is very good into Vader 1 because she blunts the major advantage that he is bringing, which is lots of extra dice, lots of extra damage. Ahsoka is able to absorb both, so I can totally see that. Lumi was third. She was in 13 games with a 9-4 win rate, so that's 70%. The Grand Inquisitor. Oh my gosh, the Grand Inquisitor was in 13 games, and he won 8 of them, so he had a 65% win rate. But this is where we're going to get to what we expected. The highest win rate primary that was taking a sizable majority of games was Darth Vader, Jedi Hunter. He was in 40 games and he won 25 of them for a 64% win rate. Next up was Lord Maul, was in 47 games. So we've talked about that, 47 games with a 62% win rate. Grievous was in 37 with a 55% win rate. Dooku was the most played primary in Adepticon. And this means he also was in a lot of mirror matches, right? Which are going to, because those are going to be 50-50s. And so that's going to like bring down your average or bring your average closer to 50%.
Yeah, and that's 57, true of every on those primaries, though.
That's true, but Dooku is going to be seeing a lot more of those, right, than these other units who are just not being played as much, right? And he had a 53% win rate. Okay, so, I mean, Dooku was, he did very, very well. One thing that shocked me was that Plo Koon was only played in 8 games. I thought for sure that Plo would be run in a lot more of these Republic lists, but he was only in 8 games and he had a 50% win rate. So I was a little bit surprised to see that. I think though, to be totally serious, what most surprised me is what I'm going to tell you right now, which is that Mama T was in 39 games, almost 40 games. She only had a 38% win rate. Okay. So Mama T, who was in almost all of the top 8 matches, she made the cut everywhere, did not do very well in Swiss. Now, there's a lot of, you know, she played in a lot of games against herself again, right? Like that's bringing that the 50%, that's bringing you close to that 50%. But I was shocked at that. And I think that a part of it is like my experience with her, which is the first time you play her and her box, if you're running her box, she's a very hard figure, I think, to figure out, right, in terms of maximizing.
I think, and yeah, so. I think if we break down units into like attack, support, utility, and then like technical piece, there's very few models that fall into that technical aspect. I'd say possibly like first Ahsoka, Mother Talzin, like there's a couple, the technical ones seem to have that higher skill point, but when utilized in lists, they're that key turning point of what allows your combos to happen.
I mean, Mama T does so much in terms of making it so that when your opponent needs to wound a figure in order to take a point, the calculus is changed by the fact that Mama T is there ready to dish out an attack. She's a very, very strong figure. I have always loved Mama T. I'm still not super convinced about the Dathos, but obviously, you know, as we'll see from the top 8, people were able to make it work. So the other thing is that, oh man, poor Matt is our Matthew Scott's going to be so sad. Obi-Wan was in 29 games, almost 30 games. He had a 38% win rate. He did not do very well. Low Gray, this was kind of expected. The Ewoks were in 11 games. He only won 36% of them. Chirpa was in 5 games and he won 1 of them. The lowest win rate primary was Queen Amidala. She was in 7 games and she won 1 of them.
Okay. So
I don't think these low plays, like I love that Ahsoka and Lumi and the Grand Inquisitor did well, and I'm sad that Low Gray, Chirpa and Padme did poorly, but also these are super low. I mean, you know, we're barely, some of these, it's 13 games, right? 11, you know, 13 games on Lumia and Grand Inquisitor, right? Whereas Vader, Maul, all these guys are rocking over 40 games. So there's just something to be said about taking things with a grain of salt. But also, I think that the Ewoks will come up as more people play them, because I think they can do a lot of really cool things. But I could see that also being something where they could kind of run into a wall.
The fundamental issue that we're always going to have in these sort of statistical analyses, which is okay, like, it's still important for us to note, is that to evaluate the efficacy of a figure in a list, right? Because we talk about primaries that are run, but as we've learned, sometimes primaries are better or worse because they are run with certain secondaries. Like, how do we talk about, like, hey, Luminara doesn't really work here? It's like, oh, well, she does if you bring the best secondaries and supports in the game with her, mm-hmm. right? And so it's yes. it's hard to say, like, well, yeah, this primary did super well and this primary didn't do super well, but, you know, what are the differences? Are all those primaries running the same, you know, supports and secondaries, or so how are we evaluating them? And then also, obviously, we don't have the same sample size. So, you know, if we run Vader in 40 games and Dooku in 40 games, well, that's great to evaluate them. Although, again, a lot of those are the same games if you're running Dooku and Vader in the same list.
Yes.
But also, again, yeah, comparing it to, well, this figure was in 10 games and it won 3 of them. It's like, okay. So it's just hard to make those same evaluations. And just with the nature of the game, you can't say, well, I'm going to run every possible permutation 40 times to see what statistically does the best.
Yes.
So all that just to say, like, hey, grain of salt, run what you want to run.
Yes.
Statistics are hard.
Yeah. Especially because, again, we're dealing, even though, you know, Dooku's in all these games, it's still a very small sample size, right? Like, we're talking dozens and dozens of games, but, like, that's not, that doesn't tell you that much, right? As opposed to thousands of games, right? Where we're, when you have a game system where you're playing thousands of games, like, you're just going to see a lot more interest, not interesting, a lot more durable of, you know, statistics. One thing I also wanted to point out was, so I just want to talk about a few primary matchups. So Vader wrecked Obi-Wan. Yeah, like, when Vader was running into Obi-Wan, he had an 83% win rate. He also did really good into Mama T, which kind of surprised me. He had a 70% win rate into Mama T. I will say this, Vader Maul didn't, if you were running Vader and Maul, you didn't lose a game at Adepticon. It was played in 8 games, it won all of them. If you were running Vader Grievous, you lost 1 game. You were in 7 games and you lost 1 of them. So there's just a lot of really interesting lineups there. I mean, Vader Grievous, we know, is a super strong, super straightforward list, and it did very well. I will say this, Vader 1 did not win a single game in which Ahsoka was on the other side of the table.
Is that because of the player or the statistics on the card?
Oh, it's a 100%. I mean, it's a player thing. I think most of the time what happens with Vader 1 is if someone's running Vader 1, they're like, I'm going to go and I'm going to smack, I'm going to crush my enemy. And then the other person has Snit or Ahsoka and maybe Dooku or something. And all of a sudden you're like, what am I supposed to do into this, right? And it's pretty easy to misplay, I think, is how I think you can play around the disadvantage that Ahsoka brings to Vader, but, you know,
well, that was kind of my point is we run into this a lot with, like, in Age of Sigmar, is you see the stats on certain armies drop as the really top tier players get bored of that army and switch to a new yes. army, and all of a sudden that one is like top tier and everyone's like, oh, this is great art. But it's the player, it's not necessarily the list, right? Like,
yeah. Absolutely.
Well,
those lists are fantastic. Maybe they're run by a new player or whatever, right? Yeah. Like, you don't know.
Yeah. Just two quick things. So the first quick thing is, I love that a year ago there was a fair amount of the community that was worried about a power creep that was going to happen, and here we are almost a year later and we're still using core box stuff and relatively, like, early release stuff, and it's still holding up. In terms of, like, the Ahsoka Vader, so I think what this showed is there's still a meta to play in here, where you have those players who are going to look at the results of Adepticon and maybe the last or the next tournament, major tournament comes up. And the more we see Vader take that place as, yeah, he's a top tier one, you know, if you're going to go to one of these tournaments, you're going to see a Vader. So if you want to beat that, you're going to practice Ahsoka, because you know Ahsoka, or like the Ahsoka Dooku list, is the counter to that. And especially when Ahsoka first came out, and for quite a while here, she's kind of just been ragged on, where a lot of people are like, well, she's got a higher skill tier. Well, she's not as usable as other primaries. This perfectly fits a meta for a character that maybe initially got left behind a little bit, but now has a perfect intricate spot where she fits in the meta.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. What I wanted to say, as the Age of Sigmar thing is, not to kind of push back on you, Mike, but I'm going to push back on you. I don't think that is a super comparable example, in the sense that with Age of Sigmar, right, you know, just with Warhammer in general, you are dealing in situations where people are really committing to a big army, and they're really just committing to one, right? This isn't a situation where we have, most people have access to everything, and they're kind of putting things together competitively, right? And so I think in these cases, like, the answer is always going to be both, right? I think about it with the cars. Like, you might have the best NASCAR or Formula One driver in the world who just is going to just absolutely drive circles around the next person. But if they're driving a jalopy and someone else has a Ferrari, right? Like, they can be a worse driver, but like, you also have to have the tools. And so it's a mix of, there's things that are better, but to get the most out of them, you definitely have to have the skill. A really talented person can take the worst thing in the game and make it work over someone who's not as good, but they're running the Ferrari, so to speak. But it's just going to be harder, and it's going to be a bigger up here battle.
Yeah, and the point wasn't that, like, I was just talking about, like, for the statistics. Like,
for sure, absolutely.
Understandably, some tools aren't as great, but this game has done a very good job of balancing most, not all, but most things.
Yeah,
I agree. And I think anything could win. It's just about how often. I agree with you 100%.
And there will be those lists as well, like Ewoks. Ewoks have, I don't even say they're a higher skill level, they're a higher micromanagement level. So if you're innately a person who micromanages well, you're going to pick them up quite quickly. If you're somebody who has to get those reps in to remember those little triggering events that happen, that's going to be the difference there. The skill level of the units, of the boxes themselves, is kind of set, and it then just determines by the player. But then it's not just one person's always going to have that ability to maximize on something over somebody else. If you put in the repetition with those units and you learn how each of that sort of functions and works and where it fits into tournament play, especially because we get to bring essentially two armies, which you don't get to do that in any other game that I've played. If you come to a tournament, you bring one list and that's what you got. These tournaments, you come and you get two lists, and it's not even two lists. You get four units and you can mishmash them up however you need to.
I have definitely come around to the point that I think a good player can do a lot with the worst thing, but there is just like a natural kind of power level that we're all playing, that things are being played at and against and compared with. And so that is also, like Scott said, all these stats, take it with a grain of salt. With that being said, though, I'm going to turn to the top eight, because I think we're going to see some very common themes being shown by the top players. So I'm just going to go 1 through 8 in terms of the top players and what their lists were. And then we'll talk about the cut. We'll go through the cut pretty quickly, just so that everyone kind of has an idea of what was played and how it fared. And then we can close out with our final comments, things that we liked, things like that. So Matt Butcher, don't know how you say your last name, Matt. I'm butchering your last name. Matt B, he won. He went 3-0 in the top cut, and he was running Cad, Dooku, Maul, Mama. Iceman, Dean B, was running Asajj, hey, Dooku, Grievous, Mama. Matt Serino was running Maul, Dooku, Mama, Vader 1. Aman Khusro, my brother Aman from the Hello There podcast, was running Maul, Vader 1, Dooku, Mama T. Godliness Duncan was running Grand Inquisitor, Maul, Vader 1, Luke. Spoiler alert, this is my favorite list. Michael Stokes was our only Republic player. That's not true. I lied. Sorry, there are two Republic players. Michael Stokes, though, was running Anakin, Obi-Wan, Lumi, Ahsoka. And then Alec Ryer was running Ahsoka, Maul, Mace, Obi-Wan. And last but not least was Dennis, who was running Maul, Mama, Vader 2, and Grand Inquisitor. So our one Vader 2 player ran him once in the cut and did not, or I'm sorry, once in Swiss and never ran him again. So those are the lists. As you can see, Mama T is in 5 of the top 8 lists. Dooku is in 4. 4 of the top 8 lists. And not only that, this is going to kind of hurt when I say it, but Dooku and Mama T are in every single one of the top 4 lists. So obviously we can detect a theme. Maul is in 3 of the top 4 lists and Vader 1 is in 2 of the top 4 lists. So obviously, while Mama T did not do so well in Swiss, she obviously was able to do very well for these players who were very good. Do you guys have any thoughts on that before I go on to the cut?
I think one of the neat things is, like, you look at the main event and you look at the top 8 there, and then you look at the top cut. And obviously the different play style, like when you go 4 games and it's best out of 4, and then you have your tiebreaker scores, and that sort of puts you into the top 8, and then you go into a deathmatch tournament. I think it was really interesting to see the dynamic shift from the main event top 8 to how the final playout happened in the top cut, and just how each of the matches lined up. I think not a lot, because a lot of the lists are very similar, but I think there is the potential there that some of the, like, the two players that were playing Ahsoka might have had a chance to play a little bit better against some of the Vader lists if they had gone against them. So it's just neat to see how, like, you get one match, and if you mess that one up in the top cut, you're done. So it's really critical which team you're going to bring into the struggle.
100%. Absolutely the case. I mean, especially because, so let's go. So the top 8, we had Matt Serino running Vader Maul, playing Duncan running Vader Maul. Like, we had a mirror match. The next one, and that was won by Matt Serino. He 2-1'd it. The next was Amon playing Dennis. Both players are running Mama Maul. Both players are running Mama Maul. The next, and I'm just going to say, spoiler alert, both Republic players got knocked out in the first, in the top cut. And I watched the game so the next was Matt B, the eventual champion, playing Michael Stokes. So Matt B was running Mama Dooku, which he ran in all 3 of his games in the top cut. And Michael Stokes was playing Ahsoka Lumi. It was a painful match to watch, because the Lumi Ahsoka list got one wound in. They wounded one figure. Oh. And it was, I mean, I love Ahsoka, but she just bricked hard into Dooku and Lumi. Dooku and Mama. There was just nothing that Michael could do. He doesn't really have the offense. Dooku and Mama have the defense. It was very, that was a tough match to watch. And then the last was Iceman, Dean B, beat Alec Rayer. He 2-0'd him. Iceman was running Asajj, here we go, and Dooku, and beat Obi Mace. So that was the top cut the top 8. The top 4 was Iceman, Dean B playing Matt Serino. So this was Iceman running Dooku Mama, playing Maul Vader. This was a murder fest, but Iceman was able to pull it out. He 2-1'd him, but it was 5 wounds apiece. You think that is the case. Matt B, the eventual champion, and Amon had a unbelievably close game where Matt B wounded 6 figures and Amon wounded 5. Both players were running Mama Maul. So Mama Maul was in, I'm sorry, Mama Dooku. So Mama Dooku was in 3 of the top 4 lists that were being played. And then in the last, so the championship game was Matt B running Mama Dooku against Iceman, Dean B running Dooku Asajj. And I think the idea here was that Iceman was thinking, I'm going to use Asajj, I'm going to use Oliver Dysel's displacement so that I'm not having to do many attacks and wounding. But Iceman actually got 5 wounds and Matt B got 3, but Matt B was able to win with 2-1. So Props to both players. I love that Asajj was on the top table. That is not what I would have expected. But Mama Dooku just proved that it's got the tools to win all the games, including against Dooku and including in the mirror match. So very, very interesting top cut. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
I think having Asajj in a top list isn't the worst thing. If you get the right terrain setup, you can absolutely block somebody off of a higher terrain objective. If you're using your force push to keep them away from the ingress point and you're sitting right at the edge of that ingress point, on her activations, you kind of climb down, slap somebody nearby and jump back up and then force push. Like I've had this done to me. Seeing her in the top two and the top two of the top cut, I'm not surprised on that one. That final matchup, I mean, it's something we're probably going to see Dooku in the meta for a little bit longer until we get a couple more of these boxes come out. And it's just his box, like everything in his box is just, it's that good. And if you need to, you swap out, like we talked about earlier, you swap out Jango for Savage if you're not going to take Mother Talzin or something like that. The Magna Guard too, like you can mitigate some of the damage to Savage using the Magna Guard because he can't target them until you get rid of them. I think in terms of a combo, I really like the box because, you go into the lore of it and Dooku and Talzin were very close in how they operated together. That's where he got his apprentices from, all of that. It was interesting to see, knowing that you were going against Dooku and Talzin, why you wouldn't try to sneak Grievous in there. Because with the mobility you can get off of Grievous, if you can get him in behind and cap out Talzin quickly, you can swing the fight really quick on that one.
Yep. No, I was going to say, Mama T is the one to attack, right? Which is so wild, but like you want to make it so that you want to really reduce the power of her force economy because, you got to get your wounds in somewhere. And she's punishing you when you're wounding the supports, right? Which is typically who you want to go for. Mama T is, I find, often who I want to attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on if she's an available target.
Yes, like, that's right. Often... Great point from Ray.
And that's where you had that gamble. And maybe you're sitting at the top two. You're in the final match. Do you play it off of a gamble and take Grievous, knowing that he can do that double advance to get in there? You can break it down. Probably if I was in that situation, I would also have taken the safe choice and taken the Dooku Talzin list.
Yeah, yeah. So good. So, so, so super good. Well, I want to ask everybody if they have one. What is your favorite list from the tournament? It doesn't need to be a top eight list, although mine is. Did anyone pick out a list that really stuck out to them?
I did, actually. Funny enough, it was the same one you picked, Duncan's list.
Okay, tell us about it.
Well, he's got the, like Ray said, I'm a Sith at heart. So, he's got the Grand Inquisitor. He's got, Jango Fett, which, we all know Jango Fett's amazing in his utility, right? Jedi Knight, Luke Skywalker, the Stormtrooper Sergeant, the Bounty Hunters, which I don't know if I would have included in my list, but whatever, that's his. Darth Vader, Jedi Hunter, Bear Sophie, which again, I probably wouldn't have included her, but that's just me. I just don't like her.
Yep.
ARFer is amazing. I love those.
So good.
Maul, OB2, and Fourth Sister. At Fourth Sister, I found kind of an odd choice. Yeah. But I think I missed Fifth Brother underneath Jango. Sorry. I love Fifth Brother. He's my favorite.
He's so good.
Yeah, it's the whole list just speaks to me. I love everything about it except for just a couple of those models, which I would have changed out, but that's personal preference, I think. It's a very aggressive list, and you can just move out and take what you want, take the objectives, get your points early, and end the game.
Yeah. The cool thing I like about this list, Mike, and I'm glad you picked it too, is that there is so much, there's a lot of diceless displacement. Like you've got Jango Fett, you've got Fifth Brother, you've got the, well, I guess Luke is a little bit different, but then you've got Barriss, you've got Maul, you've got Fourth Sister. So you've got lots of diceless displacement. If it were me, I would have ran the stormtroopers under the stormtrooper sergeant. I also probably would have ran Rex instead of Barriss, just because I think Rex
that was super my choice good. Too.
Right. So, but otherwise, I echo everything Micah said. I thought this was such a cool list. I'm so glad that Duncan did so well with it.
I love Rex.
Oh, yeah. He's so good. Turns out Rex is awesome. Shocker. Okay. Scott, what was your favorite?
So I'll say that, again, I might have done a few things differently, but I would probably go with Amon's list. So Vader, Maul, Dooku, Talzin. So I actually had, it's similar to a premiere list I'd put together until I realized that I didn't really care for Talzin and her box, but maybe with how it's performed, I'll consider bringing it back. I just found that it's one of those things where with my play style, I was like, I can run Talzin really well, but I don't think I can run the Night Sisters and Savage really well.
Yeah.
But, you know, Maul with, it was really weird to see, like, okay, Obi-2 with Maul, all right, that's really interesting, and the Mandalorian soups. You've got the Dooku perfection, right, with Jango Fett, Mandalorians, and then Vader, Hunter, Rex, and Clone Troopers. I was like, okay, that's really interesting. Generally speaking, I sort of had a very similar premiere list, except I ran Obi-1 under Vader, Obi-2. He is Obi-1 number 2.
Yeah.
But I ran Obi-2 under Vader, and I ran Bo-Katan under Maul. But I was like, I would rather have Rex than Bo-Katan. It's just the area you're getting. So I thought it was a really interesting list. I think, obviously, your Dooku is your central figure because you have three of the best units in the entire game that you're just rotating around. It works really well with Maul. It works really well with Talzin. It works really well with Vader. Strangely enough, it actually works, in my opinion, works the worst with Vader because there's just the fewest number of things that are benefiting from Vader.
Yeah.
With the Dooku box, which was kind of interesting and kind of how I might structure it a little differently for my own taste. But it obviously worked really well for him, and that's probably my favorite from the tournament.
I want to make two observations about this, because one is, so what I think he was doing most of the time was he was running Vader and Maul, so that Obi-2 is still in that Vader list, and then Dooku and Mama. I'm not positive that's the case. We could look through Swiss in order to confirm. I also want to say, I think this list was the quote-unquote best list of the tournament. Like, I think if we were to say, you know, what is the best list in terms of really strong figures, really going to perform well, if I was to tell someone to net deck a list from Adepticon, this is actually probably the list I would give them. I think it's very strong, got all the answers, and obviously Amon did very, very well with it. So good call out, Scott. Okay, Ray, what's yours?
Mine is probably Michael's. The fact that we've seen so much separatist stuff sort of hit in that top tier. Like Alex's list is pretty good, where he's got Ahsoka, Maul, Mace, and Kenobi, but you know how he's running it. He's running Ahsoka and Maul, and he's running Mace and Kenobi, whereas, like, with Michael has that ability to switch up. His list is just in between. I think now, with the information that I have now, I'd leave Ahsoka in there, and I'd possibly sub out either Luminara or Obi-Wan, depending on how I wanted to play it, with Plo Koon. I think prior to the tournament, I would have substituted out Ahsoka for Plo Koon so that you could run the double apprentice with Luminara and Plo Koon if you wanted to go that route. I think in terms of defensiveness, this list has it, but the problem is if you're not taking Anakin, you give up way too much offensive ability, so it really leads into you taking Anakin and one of the other three, depending on what you need.
Yeah, in terms of otherwise you lack the spike power, and you're just playing a defensive game, which is fine. Like, you can play the defensive game, but it just means that you're a tool down. Awesome. Awesome. Well, there were some really, really cool lists. If you're interested, obviously, you should check out the Longshanks list. They've got all the lists there, or not most of the lists there. But it was a very cool tournament. Lots of great lists. One thing that Ray called out, which I think is awesome, is talking about the game formats that were happening at Adepticon. So Ray, you want to take that off and then we'll close out?
Yeah. So they, in terms of what they ran, they had four events there, one of which we now have a official rule set for, which I will get to that one in a sec here. So the three main tournaments that they kind of ran, they had the premier one, which is like, that's the important one. That's the one that sort of carries on. They had the fun team tournament. And then they had the frenemies. So the frenemies one was really cool. You couldn't take, two units from the same list. So like if you took a separatist, you had to take a Galactic Republic. So that one kind of just mixes up the gameplay. I think in terms of replayability over multiple events, that one will lose out a little quickly. Maybe once we have more boxes, it'll be a little bit more replayable. The team tournament did fantastic. From what I've seen from the reviews, people love that one. And it was something that AMG had been talking about for a little bit. And they're very supportive of team play, like they've done it with Marvel Crisis Protocol as well. Getting into they also ran the Gonk Racing, so I was a little disappointed, but I was also, I'm at the end of the day, I'm happy with this one. So if you signed up for the Gonk Racing, you weren't allowed to take pictures, you weren't allowed to take the package home with you. There was a lot of stuff where, like, if you're at the event, you could participate in it, but you were allowed to talk about it, but you couldn't take any reference material. So from what I understand of people talk about it, they used X-Wing templates, and you kind of like got to move like a range 3 template. Like you had your variable speeds that you could run, and there was wobble mechanics in there. And you rolled a defensive dice from the Shatterpoint box, and if you rolled like a block, you were good and you didn't stumble over. If you rolled an expertise, then it counted on like a stumble. So then next turn you had to roll like an extra dice or something like that. If you impacted other gonks, you can knock them over. And if you're rolling misses, then your gonk falls over and you have to spend a turn trying to get them back up.
My gosh.
In terms of like a really fun, like, and the fact that they kept it to the convention means that that's going to be their draw to the convention. Like, come play Gonk Droid Racing. And it, like I said, at the end of the day, I loved it because it makes me want to go to Adepticon. There's all these other amazing events, but I really want to play that Gonk Droid Racing now.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Very, very awesome.
And then AMG this week just released their new rule set for One with the Force. So this is sort of like a narrative campaign where you choose either like the light side or the dark side. And then based off of how you play throughout the campaign, you start unlocking more Force abilities. And you get to activate this Force ability during the game. And it gives your character who's developing their Force powers an extra ability, so they can get like an extra 5 dice attack, or they can get I think my favorite one was on the Sith side, Hatred. At the end, whenever you were to roll a diced attack, you just roll your entire attack stat. So if it's like roll a 5 dice attack and you're playing with Vader, nope, roll 8 dice instead.
That's wild.
And then on like the Jedi side or the light side, you had more like healing and mitigating stuff, where it's like you can remove, like, I think one of them is you could remove like 3 damage and a condition, which is insane.
That is insane. Man, that's so crazy.
And I think in terms of that one for local community play, that has the potential to draw in people who want to play, not just like, hey, I'm taking this list this week, let's try it out. It's more like, hey, I can come, I can play this like episode kind of fight out, and there's carrying over consequences and benefits to it when I come next week to play as well.
I also, if anyone watched Todd's interview with Will Schick, I don't know, actually know how you say his last name, Ian Schick, he talked about how it is very clear that AMG is going to be leaning on these kind of alternative formats as a way to especially grow games locally, just exactly like what Reyes said, as a form of an easy entry and access point, which is awesome. It'll be really cool to see what they develop. And obviously I want all the Shatterpoint content I can get. So very, very cool. Okay. Spoilers. They did a spoiler session, and I know we're all going to be talking about this in much more detail later, but I just want everyone to say, what was their most favorite thing that was spoiled from the flight preview or whatever they call it?
I would say, and it wasn't really spoiled, mm-hmm. but we got a little bit of knowledge that Thrawn will introduce a new game mechanic, and I am just generally really excited for Thrawn.
Yeah, man. How much worse will our lives be for the non-Imperial players? But, yes.
We're going to get a bunch of Mandalorians, so suck it.
That's right. That's fair. Not wrong. Mike, what was your favorite thing?
I'm excited for actually the Maximum Firepower Squad pack, because I've been saying on our podcast for quite a while, it'd be nice to see more generic people to add to your squad. So having just more, you know, the snowtroopers and the commander there from Hoth to add to your Vader box or your Gideon box or whatever, just having more generics available, it really adds to the game for me, and I think it's a great decision.
Agreed, absolutely agreed. What do you think, Ray?
Mandalorian box. That it's not even an argument for me. Yeah. I'm Mandalorian all the way. I mean, on our podcast, like I've been talking about for so long, I've wanted a heavy. There's a heavy in the Mandalorian box. I wanted the armor. There's the armor in the Mandalorian box. The sculpts are amazing for it. Like I was excited for Grogu and Din and like IG-11, and like that box is great, but the Mando box topped it for me immediately. The close second was the Bounty Hunter pack with Boba Fett in it. And just because at this point, like, we've waited so long with no mention of Boba Fett, and then he came out in the perfect pack for him.
Yes. I also love, I'm this tags on with what Mike said, is I love that they're releasing a pack that is all secondaries, right? So it's like, it's not just a squad, it's four secondaries that you can splash in all these different kinds of lists, which is such a smart idea. Give us more generic so that we can have more list building flexibility, and give us these secondaries, these bounty hunters. That's what's so great about it, that can flex in.
Not everything should be a primary, right? And no. So it's nice to flex up. That being said, I do think it's been nice for people to be able to buy a box and have a ready-made thing that they can just plug in and play. So that Absolutely. Has been a nice feature. But I think it's okay, because if you have one box out of how many, 40, that is like that, it's really not a big deal.
Yeah, I think especially as we're approaching the mid-life cycle of the game, that is totally fine, right? People who are starting, go buy the Dooku box, go buy the Grievous box, you're totally fine. That's a very competitive list. Go buy the Mama T box, again, competitive list. So I love it. My pick was Han. I'm so excited for Han and Chewie. I am excited to see Han's abilities look awesome. Chewie's abilities look awesome. We're going to see what their stance cards look like. But that is just very much my style of play. And so they cannot be released soon enough. And I really hope that what's going to happen is that Luke can run with them in a list that doesn't, this sounds so sad, that doesn't involve Boosh. That, you know, I can flex in somebody else, you know, to make that work. So I'm so excited for Han. It'll be so awesome. But
going back to like the nameless character box too, it also does play in really nice with the force mechanic that they've added in with the new game, because you can play with like, yeah, I've got this no name Imperial guy who's suddenly become Force Awakened and he's being trained under this primary, and then that's why he gets all these abilities. So it having those nameless characters and the additional game modes will also help play into a build your own story kind of play as well.
That's such a great point, Ray. Such a great point.
I'd just like to say thank you guys for joining us and letting us join you and have this awesome time together. It was great meeting you guys in Vegas. It's great to expand the community like this. And yeah, thank you very much.
Well, thank you guys. Thanks for flying in from Prince George, Canada to join us, Utah Hicks. Just kidding. You guys are the ones who are Hicks. I'm probably closer to Vancouver than you guys are. Holy smokes. Kenny, but you are very far away from Vancouver. So
Kenny, I want to just give everyone You are a UCLA educated lawyer who lived in Los Angeles.
That's fair.
You are as metropolitan as they come in that way, and still you are the biggest hick in the world. Like, you don't get to grow up in Hoytsville and not be... I mean, Kenny, I have a Slack bot that whenever someone says, shoot, son, it says, ding straight.
No, it says, whenever we dad-gum. Say dadgum, dadgum.
Well, it says a few different things.
That's
people have missed on some of the things, but... Yeah, it's been awesome. I mean, this has been the greatest U.S.-Canadian collaboration since the NHL.
Awesome. Well, we want to thank you guys so much for coming. And again, we encourage everyone to check out the Chatterpoint podcast. By the time this episode releases, it sounds like Ray will have got a new episode out. So check them out. They're awesome. They've got a Discord. Check out their Discord. Do all of the things. But we want to thank you guys for coming. We hope that everyone had a lovely Easter weekend and have fun. We cannot wait to play more Shatterpoint. See everybody.